Welcome to Education Currents, a show designed to provide current educational news and commentary from a Christian worldview. The greatest resource any community has is its children. And by providing for them the best possible education, we are providing for ourselves and future generations. Join us as we explore the latest social and political issues surrounding education. Here are your hosts, Dr. Rose Gamblin.
Welcome, welcome. I am here with Pastor Anthony Usher. He is a New York resident and recently published a book titled The Rise and Fall of Capitalism, A Social, Religious, and Political Perspective. You are currently the senior pastor of the Sharon Seventh-day Adventist Church in Bronx, New York. And during your career, you've also served as a departmental director, a field secretary of the Costa Rica Conference of Seventh-day Adventists, as a youth pastor, and as an associate college professor. You hold a bachelor's degree in theology from the Adventist University of Central America, a master's degree in leadership and administration from Loma Linda University, and a doctorate in youth ministries from Andrews University. And the book, The Rise and Fall of Capitalism, published by Teach Services, is available through the website. You can go to www.teachservices.com, that's all spelled out, or you can go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or your local bookstore. Welcome to our show.
Thank you very much, Rose. Good to be here.
Now, some people might not think that capitalism has any bearing on current events or on our own walk. Why would you, as a pastor, choose to write a book on this topic?
That's a very interesting question, Rose, because I am fully aware that, you know, we have this thing of that religion and politics does not mix, you know. But I remember the words of, I believe it was Gandhi, who said anybody who believes that religion does not have a part with politics does not know what religion is all about. I remember the words also of Nancy Pelosi, and referring to Walter Reuther, she said that, you know, we cannot get the bread box without the ballot box, you know. So I don't believe that they both are in opposition to each other at all. You know, I believe that they perfectly complement each other.
Well, and in fact, when you think about it, because of capitalism, we've had more resources to push our mission. So it has a good and it has a negative connotation. In the rise and fall of capitalism, where would you say in that continuum we are today? Are we on the rise or on the fall?
I believe that we are both. In other words, the problem with capitalism, you know, that I kind of bring out in the book, is that I think capitalism is telling people that they're giving the working class crumbs, and we're calling it bread. See,
okay.
So my purpose with this book is to really, first of all, familiarize myself with what is bread, and so that I would be able to share with those of my fellow brothers and sisters, citizens of the world, that really and truly, you folks, you think you're getting bread, but really you're getting crumbs, you know. So there's a rise in it, in the sense that the rich are definitely getting richer and richer, you know. And because it's interesting to think that 1%, and I think Bernie Sanders, in this presidential race, this has been his main tool, you know, 0.1% of the populace controls 90% of the wealth of all the rest of the world combined. I mean, that's interesting. Obviously, somebody is doing well, and I think the next group is not doing so well, you know. It's on the rise for the capitalist class. But for the working class, we're not feeling it at all.
Yes. And I can so relate, you know, living in Baltimore.
Right.
I see a huge chasm. They say that the average income is $84,000 a year, but it's not really the average income. There's just the middle class is disappearing, and there's the very poor. and there must be some pretty rich people, because I just don't see them.
Right. And when somebody said that, in reference to the same question we are on, I mean, the rich elite, they are swimming in a sea of wealth that is actually drowning the poor and working class, you see? So, I mean, and I think this was what, for example, I met a young lady in LaGuardia Airport a couple of years ago, somewhere, I believe it was 2013, yeah, 2013, yes. And she was working for 40 hours a week, barely could take home $295. And out of that, she had to pay $150 for rent. Now, and plus she didn't have any health care coverage. I remember at that time I said, girl, there's hope on the way, because the Affordable Care Act was going to kick in. And in 2015, what would happen is that the corporations that have more than 50 employees would have to provide healthcare coverage. And I saw the big smile on her face. But that was short-lived, because what the corporations are going to do, they will cut down her workload to 29 hours a week to get away from giving her healthcare coverage. She has the same expenses of life, but she's making much less. This is why I insist that some people are doing pretty good. But the working class, we're not feeling it at all. And so I believe eventually it will collapse. It will collapse. And
I think so too. We have been talking all week. There's been this theme going through the interviews that I have been doing about preparing ourselves for the soon return of Jesus. How does capitalism, or where we are today, add to that feeling that Jesus is coming soon?
Well, that's a very interesting question, Rose, because precisely in the book, and this is what it climaxes toward, that yes, there is something drastically wrong, but the hope of this book is that God, who is the great defender of his people, he will stand for the oppressed when nobody else is standing for them, or they cannot stand for themselves. And there is no doubt that the working class in America is under serious attack, economically. But the good news is that the same God that stood up for our Jewish brothers and sisters during the time of the Holocaust, stood up for the African Americans during the time of slavery, I believe that same God, and it is in his word, in James chapter 5 verse 1 to 5, it talks about this exploitation. So this is not something that Anthony Usher has invented. This is scripture, and God is looking down and seeing that. He said, I see what you're doing to the working class. You're exploiting them. He said, but I'm going to step in. And this is what that book is all about.
Yeah. Okay, so as a pastor of a church, how do you put that into practice? How do you help? I mean, I know you're not supposed to become politically involved, because you have to protect the separation of church and state. But how do you help?
Well, first of all, you mentioned about the separation of church and state, And, well, I could really back that up, because the great Apostle Paul said, because I have a project with this book, and one of my biggest fear is, would my brothers and sisters be able to see, I'm talking to the leaders of our church, General Conference, right down the level. Can we relate with using a book that is on this kind of material to reach the unreached, the affluent, because this is the purpose why the book was written, to reach the affluent of our society. Now, I think Paul gives me hope, because yes, I was struggling with that. And Paul said, I become all things to all men, so that I might be able to save a few. You see, so that's the premise where I am at. Because for example, if I want to witness to a Rush Limbaugh, for example, about Adventism, or a Clint Eastwood, or a or Michael Jordan. I mean, I could send the 28 doctrines, you know, the 28 doctrine belief. But then I could send a rise and fall of capitalism, which covers the same thing because the truths are wrapped up right in the book. Second coming, you know, judgment, end of the world. So which one of those two books, Rose, do you believe that, you know, Rush Limbaugh will pick up on one read? It will have to be the rise and fall of capitalism. And it will have the same effect as, you know, the other book.
So let's talk about the spirit of poverty.
Mm-hmm.
If your thesis is capitalism really perpetuates poverty.
Yes.
And also poverty becomes a culture. I mean, we often in our church have people who are quite proud about their poverty, that, you know, that they're so self-sacrificing, or they, you know, that is a some type of a badge that they're poor. How do you work with your congregations to combat that mindset?
All right. First, we got to go back to the fact that I mentioned a little earlier, that I will have to first recognize what bread really is, so that I will be able to go back to my brothers and sisters and tell them, listen, you think that you're eating bread, but you're getting crumbs. Okay? I think that's the first thing. Now, you touching on the fact that capitalism perpetuates slavery and poverty, sorry, instead of really eradicating it. I just want to share a couple evidence to really substantiate that. Back in 1964, Lyndon B. Johnson launched a campaign that he called the War Against Poverty.
Yes.
And 50 years later, after spending $22 trillion on a war against poverty, still the unemployment rate in 1967 was the same that the poverty rate is the same in 1967, 3 years after the campaign against poverty began. The poverty rate back then was the same as it is today, 50 years later. It is obvious that we are spending money, yes, but not to eradicate poverty. It will only take, I understand, $175 billion every year to eradicate poverty, not only in America, but in the entire world. And so, look at another instance. We spend $740 billion to keep people on welfare, when we could just spend $164 billion of that $740, raise the minimum wage to $10.10. Millions of people are going to come off of poverty. Millions are going to get off of welfare. 85,000 brand new jobs will be generated, and $22 billion, new dollars, will be injected into the economy. I mean, why don't we do that? It's obvious. We are spending money not to eradicate poverty, but to perpetuate it. And that's the biggest discovery that I came to after all my research. I mean, this sends shivers through me.
So when Jesus says, the poor you will have with you always.
Oh.
He's not making that a mandate. He just knows the human heart. And he knows that greed will continue until his second coming.
I get very emotional when you say that, because I have never looked at it that way until you said it. But it really came home that this is why he said it, you know.
Yes.
Because he could have looked down and he could have seen what men will be doing just to see.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're trying to prove. I don't know what it is. But it just doesn't make sense. But yes, I could understand why we'll always have the poor with us.
Yes. I know that poverty really yaps at the door of many. I mean, I've been unemployed and it was very difficult. I can just look at my tax records and see that year when I really didn't bring home enough money between the two of us to make the house payment, and that I was looking distinctly at the distinct possibility of, you know, living in the car. And I think those lessons were good for me because they gave me a compassion that I would not have had otherwise. When I have parents that come to school, they've walked to school pushing a stroller, dragging a wagon, wanting their kids in a private school, and they don't have any money to pay tuition. That hits me hard. And yet I know our God is a God of abundance. He owns the cattle on 1,000 hills. Look at your church. What is the biggest obstacle of getting all the resources that you need to do all the ministries that you would like to do in your church? What is the biggest obstacle?
How would I put that? I believe that God, I really believe in the writings of Ellen White. I am very strong on that. And you know, when Israel was about to build their temple, the sanctuary in the wilderness, it was God who gave the, or he said, build me a sanctuary that I may dwell among you. But before he gave the command to do that, he assured and he placed the money in the pockets of the brothers and the sisters. And so that when he asked, he was able to, they knew, they had the money already. I believe that it was God who called us to this ministry. And I believe he has already placed within our possessions everything that we need to carry that through. You know, I believe it's there. But the problem, the biggest problem I'm facing, Rose, is that, I mean, selfishness, you know, selfishness. Which was what brought sin into the world, you know. And it is the same thing today, man. Folks just holding on. And that's the biggest challenge for us as ministers, because we are dealing with volunteers. You know?
Yes.
And we do get a salary and so forth. But these people are volunteers. We can't really come and, you know, with a big stick, you know? So that would be a biggest problem.
Yes. I was trained in marketing by Metropolitan Life. And their mantra was, if you have a problem that money can solve,
right,
you don't have a problem. You know, of course, meaning that the problem always is with the mindset of the person you're working with, because people tend to find a way to get what they want. So how does someone who's being paid to be to pastor and shepherd a church? I ask this for myself too, because I see it where the churches think, oh, we're paying the pastor, so he needs to do the work. You know,
right.
we are already paying someone to do the work. We don't need to do the work. He needs to do the work. I mean, do you think that's flawed? I mean, it could be a flaw in our system, because in the Bible times, the Apostle Paul went out and, you know, sewed some tents together, and mm-hmm. he was like employed on the side to do his ministry.
Well, how I handle that, Rose, is that you've got to know who you're working for, and you've got to know who is paying your salary. See, many of my colleague ministers and some of our administrators, I mean, they don't like when ministers talk like how I talk. But I have no other way to do it, man, because, you know, and many of them, if you'd ask the average pastor, who pay your salary? They'd say the church members. But that's not true. My salary comes from the tithe, and that tithe belongs to God. And he, in turn, says, okay, I would like that, you know, those that preach my gospel live by the gospel. See, so We've got to understand that it's not the treasurer that is paying my salary at the conference office. You know, I mean, he believes that way, but it's really coming from God. He's just a custodian of the funds. And so I think when you get that clear in your mind, and I think that gives a comfort that no matter what the brethren do, who support you, I can't walk away. Because the one who I am working for is the one who called me to this ministry.
I just want to conclude this show with your comments on Chapter 11 of your book titled The Rise and Fall of Capitalism. You titled it The Economic Utopia. And just kind of just whet our appetites, so we'll want to read the whole book here.
The Economic Utopia. That's yes. Chapter 11, I believe it is. Yeah, okay. What that is saying is that it gives a history of you know what happened, how we have capitalism today, in a sense that how should I put this now, economic utopia, where the economic utopia in a sense that I'm trying to kind of remember. Yes, thank you very much. Yeah, what is happening now is that right. You see, and this goes back to the situation we have with the recent recession that we have. Many people believe that this was brought about because of, you know, the American working class came to an economical crossroads. Yes, I think I can begin to put myself back together on track. All right, there was a time when, I mean, before 1970, I mean, that's when the economy was booming because of the fact that, well, you know, we had productivity on the rise, as well as we had, and then wages also increased.
Yeah, we had the housing bubble.
That's right. So productivity was going up and wages was also on the rise. But then now, come after the 1970s, and I don't remember who was president that time, but after the 1970s, you know, that's when the folks, they came up with a bright idea. We're going to flatten wages, okay? And then now, at the same time, you know, be able to put more in our pockets and so forth. But I always maintain that a healthy economy rides on the shoulders of living wages. I mean, if you want people to really be able to invest back into the economy, you've got to give them enough money for them to do that. I think Henry Ford recognized that, and, you know, that's why he paid his workers three times the amount, minimum wages.
Yes.
And with that, you know, the folks, they had enough money now to be able to buy the stuff, and then the economy grew.
Okay, well, I'd like to conclude the show with some words of encouragement. So what would you share with my listeners that would
is what I was looking for. I want to encourage everybody that might be listening with these words, right? And I quote the famous, the late John F. Kennedy, "With a good conscience, our only sure reward. With history the final judge of our deeds. Let us go forth to lead the church we love, asking his blessings and his help, but knowing that here on earth, God's work must truly be our own."
Amen. That's great. One last thing to say, and that's God bless.
You have been listening to Education Currents, a production of MRG Media Ministries. For more on this or to contact us, go to mrgmediaministries.com. That's all one word, mrgmediaministries.com.